Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1 cubic foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, downloaded Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way. Take the mic.
Yes, it is Open House Week at Post Wrestling. It kicked off today, where we are providing all of our Post Wrestling exclusive shows on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com. Hopefully, you are wise enough to sign up today, and you would have already received Post Pro Res earlier today with WH Park and Karen Peterson, and getting Rewind to Raw in all of its glory, the XL version, where you know all the news that we talked about. Psycho Stu being out of hospital, Quentin Jackson's remarks online about the latest involving his family regarding this incident. Real American Freestyle kicking off this past weekend. September to Remember coming to London, Ontario. A hotspot when it comes to ECW nostalgia. The Smashing Machine hitting Italy. And going down the memory bank toward All In 2018 that took place on this date in 2018 in Hoffman Estates as well.
Yeah, about 38 minutes that John and I just recorded talking about all of these topics. Usually, I have to say my favorite part, and I think the best part of these shows that we reserve exclusively for Cafe members. So thank you to those of you who have already signed up to the free tier. Just our way of giving a free sample of everything that we do on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, in addition to all of the other bonus shows we release. Pretty much something every day at the Post Wrestling Cafe.
So again, if you sign up on the free tier this week on the cafe, you're going to be getting our final review of this season of WWE Unreal. That's going to be released on Tuesday, chatting about episode 5 entitled WrestleMania. On Thursday, we'll put out Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, featuring the All-Americans against the Foreign Fanatics, as well as Bruce Hart and Ross Hart. Keith Hart coming out of retirement for the Hart Foundation against Shawn Michaels and his Masked Knights.
My main event. Nobody else.
Yeah. Well, that is going to be covered on Thursday. And then going into the weekend, we have got Rewind to SmackDown, Collision Course, and of course this week, all the XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. News of the day, questions, and feedback at the end of the show. So you can get a whole sample of what we do each and every week on the Post Wrestling Cafe. Sign up for the free tier, and then if you like what you hear this week, you can consider jumping up and joining the cafe and get this on a regular basis. Way will make it worth your while after Survivor Series 93.
Oh, of course, yeah. And if not that, then the entire archive at the Post Wrestling Cafe, which at this point I'm sure is something like, well, I think we're definitely over 1,500, if not probably close to 2,000 bonus shows now. So get all that just for $6 if you're interested.
Yes, including our review of All In 2018, which I did tweet out today if people want to go back and listen to our young voices from 7 years ago.
And what we sound like after an unnecessarily long car trip thanks to a wrong turn I made on Lake Ontario or Lake Erie, whichever lake it is.
Extra quality time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, tonight we are going to be spending some quality time for the second night in a row at the La Défense Arena in Paris, which we didn't get a WrestleTix number, but the announced number on the broadcast was 23,169. And I mean, this place looked pretty damn packed. I don't know if the number that we got on Sunday that they announced for Clash in Paris was almost verbatim what WrestleTix had. It would not surprise me if they had, you know, 53,000-54,000 people between both nights here. And again, a super lively crowd in Paris.
23,000. I wouldn't know enough to doubt that.
Which would make this fine. One of the bigger Raws in history. At that number. I mean, you're looking at like the Georgia Dome and Sky Dome. That would be it would be on a short list of Raws that have done that large of an attendance. And we've got the similar set with the Eiffel Tower. They were going to get their usage out of that, and a recap of the show from Sunday. And then we go to the entrance in the back where CM Punk is awaiting Seth Rollins to arrive. And this man stood here for like 2 hours and got outwitted as Seth would make his way into the building. So a lot of standing for CM Punk during most of this episode.
You know, maybe getting his step count up. You know, I'm sure he sits an awful lot.
You think he was pacing? Do you think he was doing some wall sitting and stretches?
Yeah, sure. I mean, he's had enough on the flight over here, I'm sure.
Maybe did some Instagram stories?
Possibly, yes. Mm-hmm.
So he's waiting there. Jey Uso comes out and says how he was supposed to have the title around his waist, but instead he shows off what's around his waist, and it's the bandages around his ribs, and says, you know, if I had stayed out of Roman's match, I wouldn't have gone into that match hurt, but I don't play when it comes to my family. And he warns people, you don't put your hands on my family. Reigns is in the hospital, so he calls out the Vision, who I think we just established had not arrived yet at the building. But LA Knight walks out and acknowledges that both of us are losers. He means in the match. And Rollins lives in his wife's shadow, but says, Jay, we had a chance to remove Seth from the match by putting him through the table, because no one ever comes back from a table spot. But Jay, you spoiled it by super kicking Punk. Then I went for the elbow drop to Seth through the desk. You screwed that up too. And Knight is sick of being left laying and not being world champion. Enough is enough. It's time for a change for LA Knight. And out come Bronson Reed and Bron Breakker, who made their way into the building. And Knight cut this really lame joke about the two liking eighth grade so much they repeated it 3 times. And then says that Bron comes back here saying, well, I've got enough brain cells to beat you because I did it twice. And Heyman is not there because he's in the hospital. So the crowd chants for OTC. And Braun says, we're just a couple of dogs off the leash. And Reed tells them to acknowledge your tribal thief. The crowd starts swearing at them. There was a lot of swearing from this crowd on this show. And I only bring it up because we get the annoying Netflix censoring. So they took out Reigns, and now it's time to take out you two. And Bronson Reed says, unless you two don't have the balls, and you're all yeet and no skeet. Now, I never thought we were going to hear the term skeet on an episode of WWE programming, but here we are in 2025.
Get censored.
No. Okay. Remember that AJ Styles shirt they put out in TNA?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe that can be the same font they use for all yeet, no skeet.
I mean, honestly, though, at this point, I feel like skeet as a term, popularized by, I guess, Little John, you know?
That's what I think of.
That's like a 20-year-old song, okay? Like, think about that. It's hardly risque anymore when, like, what?
Well, Jay, like, nearly broke when he heard this. Like, it did not seem like he knew this line was coming, because, dude, he had the giggles here.
Yes, right. Okay.
He said skeet.
Legendary shirt.
Way is the best. I can't believe you found that.
Oh, so fast. Yeah. I God wonder if they sold this one in France.
Do you think AJ had heard about the term skeet with this this look on his face?
No, I'm not
Oh,
sure.
God. He's thinking about what...
Isn't that... I mean, listen, it's a bad shirt. Legendarily bad. This TNA AJ Styles... shirt.
The bar is, would Braden have bought it? And the answer is yes.
Now, if it was a different color, it was not white.
Okay?
Well, I think the white green is certainly contributing to it. What does the back say?
Styles. Styles.
Oh, styles. Sorry. Oh, Jesus. It's an awful shirt. Just taking away the...
So bad that I mean, I'm sure we all wish we bought one.
No. Anyway.
They should reissue it, really, and they'll make a ton of money.
Well, Jay is ready to skeet all over tonight in France, and they accept the challenge, and LA Knight calls them a greasy warthog and a cross-eyed halfwit. I felt like LA Knight was slowly morphing into Jerry Lawler throughout this segment.
I'll say, on paper, in a John Pollock recap, doesn't read like the coolest verbiage, but through LA Knight, like, he's able to make it work somehow. You know, like, we did the comparisons to The Rock are there, and it's all in the delivery, isn't it? I said last night, I felt like the match didn't really make the build didn't make a great case for why Jey Uso and LA Knight were involved in the main event last night. I guess we understand why. I felt like they gave appropriate sort of like focus on these two coming off of it to give them a solid sort of story coming off of the match and solid focus coming off of the match. I thought this was good follow-up. I thought Knight and Jay, throughout the entire episode, I thought they came across quite well together with their tension that they're trying to drive between each other. I kind of felt it was nice and natural. Breaker and Reed, you know, this was a chance for us to see them without Paul Heyman getting to speak on their own. Not as well, I would say, as those two, but they're also two guys that we're not necessarily watching just for their promos. You know, they have, at this point, three great talkers as a part of their faction. But it is always still nice to maybe get a chance to see where they're at. And, like, they're capable, but I would hardly say notable at talking on the mic at the moment.
All I will say is, if you did not enjoy my reciting of the jokes from LA Knight, just wait till we get to Ray Combs on Survivor Series 1993, former host of Family Feud, the late Ray Combs. Kabuki Warriors and EO are backstage, this featuring my favorite character on this whole episode of Raw, Asuka. With a close second by Kairi Sane for all of her reactions throughout the night. She is subtly very enjoyable in it, just playing off of Asuka. I mean, I'm really into these Kabuki Warriors now in this character, where they're just like, Asuka has just become like the domineering older sister, just berating every choice that Io Sky is making. So,
well, they at least have characters now, which is a huge step up, but it helps that they're good too. Yeah.
So they're backstage. Sky apologizes about last week. Asuka explains that they're family. We will take care of Judgment Day for you. And Sky offers to help, but Asuka says, unlike Rhea, we don't need help. And Sky insists, I'm done with Rhea. And as Asuka walks off, Sane assures Sky, everything will be okay. Sane just wants everyone to get along. And I thought all three were very enjoyable in all, and they were in a lot of segments tonight.
Totally. Yep. And you know what? All of it worked, you know. Asuka especially has really taken a step up into feeling like a focal point on the show, and she's developed this. This entire scene is, to me, like, quite bizarre. Like, just, you know, seeing three Japanese women just speak to each other in English in, like, very sort of, like, pronounced and unnatural ways. But I'm, like, I'm really enjoying it as almost just this, like, fictitious world where, like, people would actually talk like this. You know, it does not feel of our universe. But as a look into like an alternate dimension, I'm kind of getting really lost into it. I really like it.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax tip and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. So Raquel Rodriguez and Roxanne Perez take on the Kabuki Warriors, and this allows Michael Cole to remind us of the history of Triple Tails.
No, yeah, I'm sure
his favorite Joshi group. Asuka uses the octopus, and Raquel powers her way out, and then it's Kairi and Roxanne are in, and they had this great sequence together. And there's a full Nelson into a stunner by Sane onto Rodriguez and is held by Perez in the corner for an avalanche splash. And then Perez sends Sane into the barricade for the commercial break. But then we come back and Perez goes for this tilt-a-whirl head scissors onto Kairi Sane, and they just totally mess up this tilt-a-whirl to the point that Wade says that things are starting to turn ugly in that ring. And the tag is made to Asuka. She comes in. It was played like the Kabuki Warriors are the baby faces in this. And Asuka was getting tons of chants from the crowd, even in this role. And she attacks Perez with big strikes. And Perez is pulled to the corner by Raquel. She tags in, and it's Raquel with a slingshot into a Falcon Arrow. And Kyrie's in, tries the Suzuki armbar, and then they land on the floor. And there's a roll-up by Perez into the Asuka lock. Perez escapes, and Kyrie leaps off the top with an insane elbow to the floor. Asuka blocks Pop Rocks and goes for a spinning heel kick. And unfortunately, this was way off. And Perez sells the move, and Asuka just grabs her and takes her into
I don't know if it was supposed to be a spin heel kick or what was it? Or like the hip attack? You know, Asuka,
The fact that we're debating this tells you the execution. She got high enough that it looked like it was a spinning heel kick, but the hip attack would make more sense.
Didn't look great. And the ensuing scuffle seemed to be a little bit mixed up too, because she went for a cover, then decided that, or I remember that she wasn't supposed to go for the cover and instead went for the chicken wing. So something was messed up there with the finish, but
gets a submission, 11 minutes and 38 seconds. I'd say like there were two really noticeable like gaffes in this match, but I was enjoying this match in particular before the break with I thought Kairi was before that tilt-a-whirl. Like I thought Kairi and Perez gelled pretty well in the first half of this match, and it goes without saying like the audience was especially into Asuka in this match as well.
Yeah, like for me, it's one of those where like the electricity in the match was so great, especially for the crowd's love of Asuka, that I was able to overlook a lot of imperfections in the body of the match itself, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, to me overall felt like a great showcase for Asuka and Kairi, and you know, as a way to just kind of like complement their sort of increased exposure both behind this like backstage through speaking roles. I thought this was sort of a perfect thing.
Adam Pearce makes the announcement that the women's championship is going to be decided by one match, as Stephanie Vaquer and Io Sky, who are both owed title matches, will face off at WrestlePalooza. The winner will get the vacant title. So no tournament, just straight up match on September the 20th and is added to the Indianapolis show.
So you're getting it a new champion on this show. It's one they could have done at what was this last show?
Clash
in Paris. Thank you. But they're choosing to save for WrestlePalooza. It's a big one, and it'll be going up against All Out.
CM Punk is still waiting, just hanging out. Finn Balor against Dragon Lee. So it was the latest Dragon Lee opportunity to get a singles match, and they had a very, very entertaining match here. JD McDonagh is in Balor's corner. Dragon Lee hit a Tope Con Hero setting up the commercial break, and then he's back. Rebound German, but Balor bounces off the ropes and followed with a Liger Bomb. The crowd is singing, waving their arms all over the place, and Lee gets caught with a shotgun dropkick, and the crowd starts cheering for Finn and then boos when Dragon Lee stops the coup de grace. So JD gets onto the apron and Lee does his flying Hurricane Rana over the top, sending JD to the floor. That gets a big pop. And then Balor, who is placing the Tree of Woe,
does the sit-up, pulling Dragon Lee off the top by his mask, leading to the coup de grace, and wins in 9 minutes and 44 seconds. Very entertaining match that these two had, with the commercial break in between, of course.
Yeah, great match here. You know, this crowd really didn't make this one feel like a big deal in that, I mean, they were treating both of these two, especially Finn Balor, like he was actually special. So it was really the first time in a long time where you're sort of reminded that, yeah, like this, both of these guys, but especially Finn, he is, I would say, a lot more of a sort of special attraction than I think his current role, you know, has kind of placed him in. Dragon Lee also looked really awesome. I mean, crowd, though, were definitely the stars of it all.
And then we go backstage and we have got the meeting between Nikki Bella and Io Sky. So that means we are going to get more Kabuki Warriors, because as Nikki tells Io that, you know, Stephanie is my girl.
Stephanie Backway, right?
But she wishes Io Sky good luck in her match with Backway at WrestlePalooza. And Sky responds that, I hope, Nikki, you get another shot at Becky Lynch, even though you were beat clean in the middle. So the Kabuki Warriors come in, and Asuka just so nonchalantly pushes Nikki out of the frame, like, get away, and states that you are not friends with her. As Nikki walks away and says to Io, we will be tag champions, and we will help you beat Vakair. But Io says, I don't need help. And Asuka points out, you didn't win on your own at SummerSlam. And Sane is, meanwhile, still playing peacemaker here. And again, is like pleading to Io, like, it's going to be fine. And Asuka, Kairi! She screams off screen. I hope that becomes the staple of these scenes, where Asuka leaves the scene and has to scream for Kairi to join her.
It's their version of Adam. You know, yeah. It definitely is already becoming a bit of a catchphrase.
I feel Kairi is going to end up being like the breakout of this story in some form or fashion, because she's going to be caught in the middle and is going to have to pick sides at some point. And anyway, again, I'm repeating myself, but I enjoyed these scenes quite a bit tonight. And just the way she just dismisses Nikki Bella, I thought it was great. And that was our only scene with Nikki on the show.
Yeah, I mean, she's over there anyway. It remains to be seen if she'll be sticking around. But I guess Io did say, I hope you get another shot at
Becky.
So maybe that's some indication that she might be sticking around.
Her and Vakway can get together. Go for those.
Do not make a mistake if you're somebody who is coming back from retirement, because you will be soundboarded by John Pollock
for
months to come.
Balor and JD meet up with Dominic, who said he couldn't be out there with them because he was planning, but was there in spirit. So Adam Pearce comes in to inform JD and Balor they are banned from ringside for Dominic's Intercontinental title match with AJ. And Balor's just all smiles at this news and ends it by saying, hey, I guess we'll be there in spirit, right? This is like the longest drawn out. Like, we've been going months with this Dominic Balor stuff. Like, back to Mania, it's been this dissension that's been building here.
Constantly on again, off again. And, you know, it does make me wonder if the Liv Morgan injury might have disrupted things and delayed things. They cooled it off for a bit, and they're slowly, I think, at times ramping it up. I think it's just going to be something that'll continue to exist. Judgment Day without tension wouldn't be an interesting faction.
New Day and Grayson Waller against the War Raiders and Penta. During the break, Kofi cuts a promo on the crowd, insulting France, telling them how much they smell, they don't have friends, and then Xavier Woods calls them the worst wrestling crowd on the planet because you don't have the stamina like fans do in America. And tells them, do not chant New Day sucks at us because we are here to work. So, of course, that starts the New Day sucks chants. War Raiders have new Raw is War shirts. So good for them for getting those. War Raiders come off the apron, followed by a high cross by Penta. Ivar is in. He misses a seated splash in the corner, and then Waller hits a rolling flatliner to Eric. Kingston splashes him on the back, and the Six are in. Woods in, hits a tornado DDT to Ivar, and then the War Raiders take Woods. Eric hoists Woods into the air as Ivar launches himself off the top, splashing Woods, and then it ends with Penta hitting the Mexican Destroyer and pinning Woods in 8 minutes and 24 seconds. They would also be talking about this New Day funeral that they were going to hold, and they ended up airing a highlight of this during one of the commercial breaks, and I didn't think it was anything all that special, but now they have put up a 13-minute version of this funeral on YouTube, and
Did you watch it?
No, I was not watching. I watched the 2-minute version of this, and it was not much to write home about. I'm sure there were some witty lines in it, but I'm not sitting down for a 13-minute digital funeral.
The timing of it feels really odd because they lost these championships 2 months ago, okay? And I know they've been doing the grieving gimmick all the way then, but does it take 2 months before you have a funeral service for something? I guess they were, maybe they were performing an autopsy. Maybe that was the holdup. I continue to be just so unimpressed and unentertained by all the stuff with the New Day and Grayson Waller. I mean, I think there are spurts of, like, you know, interesting stuff, but overall, I find all of it pretty uninteresting. Good action in this match, though. Like Asuka in the last match, Penta was really the driving force behind the crowd here. And they built the match around him to really good effect. Match came across well on TV, but overall, I just have very little interest. These War Raiders, they haven't been on TV.
It's six people that really don't have any, like, the New Day are just doing, yeah, the grieving gimmick, but it's like, it's six people that don't really have a whole lot of stories going on at all. This was just sort of a six man to
it,
do a
it,
six man.
It felt like at one point, I mean, who are the tag champions? Remind me.
JD and Balor.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I needed that reminder because it just feels like they're, I don't know, they're just never that big of a presence. And the tag title scene on Raw, especially, I thought they were going to maybe shape things up a little bit by injecting a few more people, but they certainly have the talents for it. They just really made no effort into making you feel like this is a division that we should really be caring about.
How did the War Raiders perform Penta's dance?
I don't know, dude. I'm 6 out of 10.
Okay. Kathy Kelly is with Rhea Ripley to react to the news that Sky will take on Vicar at WrestlePalooza and mentions her relationship with Io. Rhea says, I respect both, but my eye is on that prize, and she wants to fight for the title. So the Kabuki Warriors are back, and Asuka asks if you already want a title shot before Sky has even won it. And Rhea says, I've always wanted to be champion. I don't care who has it. And Asuka warns Rhea to stay away. You are not friends with her. Rhea warns Asuka, don't push me. And Asuka says, I'll push anyone I want. Try me. And as Asuka leaves, who is left there? Awkwardly, Kairi Sane, who is then summoned off camera to follow Asuka.
Mm, yeah. I'm interested to think about how this will all play out because, I mean, we got Io versus Stephanie Vaquer at WrestlePalooza. So Io could win the championship. And then that would open up everybody here, Rhea, Asuka, obviously, for singles matches. The other direction is Io could lose against Stephanie Vaquer, and we break off into tag team scenarios with all of this. So there are several directions that they can go, and it's all dependent on whether or not Io wins.
Pierce is with Perez and Raquel, and Perez wants to be added to the women's title match at WrestlePalooza, but Pierce is not hearing it, and he's got a meeting scheduled with Lyra Valkyria, who walks in, and Perez insults Lyra. They argue about Bayley, and they just go back and forth here. Very contrived argument. So the Judgment Day leave, and Pierce gives Lyra an update. She flew Lyra to Paris to give her this in-person update on Bayley. She says, or Pierce says, I spoke to Bayley. She said some weird stuff, but she'll be back soon. And Lyra, realizing how long she's traveled for this update, says, that's all you've got? Okay. And then explains how she needs to get back into the ring and wants to face either Raquel or Roxanne next week. and they agree and do a very awkward handshake. This was not a good segment, but
well, it was a segment of necessity, I would say, rather than, I don't know, anything we'd be celebrating.
I just don't know where we are with this Lyra Bailey story. I think Lyra has really taken the brunt of this. Like, I think people are curious about the Bailey character, but this, like, we did this, you're out of my life, and now she's, what's she so concerned about? What are, I don't know. I'm giving too much thought to this.
I mean, I feel like this could hint at towards Bailey maybe re-debuting for the match next week with Lyra and one of the, you know, either Roxanne or Raquel, if possible.
Which version of Bailey?
We'll find out. Okay. Yeah. Which are the three faces? Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Dominic Mysterio and the hometown hero, born and raised in Lyon, AJ Styles, who comes out, huge reception. The crowd is singing for him. I mean, this scene was pretty awesome as he comes out. They're treating this guy like just the biggest star. This is, and boy, did AJ like have just a certain like vigor in his step in this match, because this guy was working this like a pay-per-view. Dom jumps him during the introduction, so he gets the heat early on, but Styles rebounds, Ushigaroshi, and man, just all of his stuff is, I thought, just looked great here with Dom. He goes for the Styles clash, but is driven into the corner, and Dom springs out of the corner with a head scissor, sending AJ off the edge to the floor, but then Dom is caught on off the edge and powerbombed onto the desk. They went through two breaks, and Dom, taking Adam Copeland's Edge-O-Matic, has now introduced the Mullet-O-Matic.
Tribute to Uncle Edge.
I guess so. Cole mentions Cena using the Styles Clash at the pay-per-view as AJ hits a snap suplex, sending him into the corner. But then Dom comes back with a Michinoku driver, hits the Three Amigos that Michael Cole reminds us was popularized by Eddie Guerrero, in case you were wondering.
His other uncle.
His other, yeah, all family members getting referenced here. Frog Splash leads to this great near fall as AJ kicked out right at the last second. Stops a 619 from Dom, taking the legs, and turns it into the Styles Clash. But Dom manages to get the foot on the rope, and AJ hits this brutal bloody Sunday. I mean, it looked fantastic. And goes for the phenomenal forearm when El Grande Americano shows up, nails him with the loaded mask, and that leads to a frog splash and Dominic retaining in 16 minutes in what was, I thought, a very entertaining match that they had for television. Regular WWE finish with someone getting involved here. And maybe somewhat surprising that some thought Dom might drop the belt here if he's going to win the mega championship, but obviously wanted to keep the belt on Dom here.
I thought so. I thought there would be a real chance, you know, especially given
this
incredible atmosphere.
This place would have gone insane for a title change.
What better place to crown, just to give, I guess, this Raw crowd a title change, you know, than to have their favorite guy, AJ Styles, beat Dominic Mysterio. But
dedicates clearly, the win to Air Paris right afterward. I mean, this could have been just poetry.
He should change his name to Air Paris, I guess, after today, or Air Lyon. But, I mean, we do get an El Grande Americano AJ Styles feud coming off of this. Maybe we can expect AJ having some involvement in that Worlds Collide show.
Yeah, that's what I thought coming out of this, is getting AJ on that show.
And it gives El Grande Americano now, like, a, you know, an actual singular feud that he could have on Raw. So this is, you know, done for, I guess, a greater purpose. And maybe we'll leave more speculation about whether or not Dominic would actually win the mega championship, or if this means he's more likely to not.
Yeah. Like we talked last week about the potential of a Jericho eventually being in that role where he could be this utility for some of these other companies. I think that's the role AJ is going to be in. I could see him part of Worlds Collide, and I could certainly see him on Bound for Glory in October as well. So a good match that these two had. Great crowd, as expected. They recapped Reed and Breaker's attack on Roman Reigns, and we got the updates, the health updates. Paul Heyman has a larynx contusion, and Reigns has multiple fractured ribs, and he is out indefinitely, probably recuperating in Australia in a costume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jackie Redmond is with LA Knight, who doesn't know if this was the best decision to work with Jay tonight, but I don't know how to quit. And we can either survive together or die apart, which seems a little dramatic for a Raw main event. But then LA Knight says, just taking words out of my own vocabulary that I often use with Way. If you do dirt, you get dirt. Don't make me give you dirt. And Jay walks in and says, I come from the dirt, and tells Knight to stay out of his way and we won't have any problems. Some dirt, Way.
Yeah, and it sounded way cooler coming out of his mouth than
me. Yours. Than me?
I mean, but it's way more entertaining coming out
of him. If you do dirt, you get dirt. Don't make me give you any dirt.
Yeah.
CM Punk is still waiting. I mean, my God, this guy, he needs to get like a, I don't know, like...
He could hire somebody to just text him, you know, like whenever they show up, I suppose.
Yeah, like, couldn't he, like, if he has Seth's, do you think in it, the character of CM Punk would have Rollins, like, phone in his, or number in his phone? He could do, like, a people tracker?
Probably, I don't know if it works like that. How could you track somebody just by having their phone number?
Well, he would have his iPhone. You can send your location.
Yeah, well, why would Rollins send it to him?
Well, I don't know.
This was really the most efficient way, John.
It really worked out for him, didn't he? So he is there, and Rhea Ripley is with him, and says she's sorry for what happened and wishes Punk good luck. Pierce comes in and says, Seth is in the building, and Punk could not look like more of a goof here. How did he get in here? I don't know. There's obviously another door, wasn't there? I don't think he came in with a helicopter. So I think this segment was the total red herring for people by placing Rhea Ripley here. I think that was the only purpose of this segment with Rhea.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
Yeah. This was a New Day's funeral segment. You can watch 13 minutes of it on YouTube. Rusev promo. We show highlights of the good old fashioned Donnybrook, and he is willing to extend his arm to Sheamus. Maybe we can be friends again now that you know your place is beneath my feet. And he warns the roster, I was scary before when I was held back, and I'm devastating now that I'm free. So he was held back before. I don't know how he's been set free.
By beating Sheamus.
Okay. Okay. So he was tied down by this feud. Okay.
Yeah, he's free from Sheamus.
He got him on a pay-per-view, so I don't think he should complain too loudly. Now, pay-per-view.
Now he is able to do even more pay-per-views, PLEs. So I would have liked to have known, like, maybe on this episode, coming off the momentum of that match, what his next feud would actually be, rather than, like, be stuck to this sort of, like, black room type of promo that ultimately doesn't really leave us with a whole lot.
Well, we saw Otis return at Triple Mania, so I think we have unsettled business.
Rusev and Otis? Oh, he from went- that? Oh, God. He said he's set free, okay? Not, like, further shackled into, like, these sort of low-tiered, you know, God, mix. He should be in AAA facing Omos, okay?
Okay.
Bring Rusev down to AAA. I think that'd be a lot.
I mean, I think Rusev would be an awesome heel in AAA.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too.
Really, the main segment of the show sees CM Punk come out to the ring and calls it an endless war with Seth Rollins. I've been too patient waiting all day, so I am hijacking the show until Seth faces me man to man. Seth's music plays, but instead out walks Becky Lynch. And as she comes out, this whole arena is chanting AJ Lee. And Becky responds saying that she is a dope that doesn't work here, only ensuring the continued chance. Punk says, this has nothing to do with you, Becky, and Punk wants to just exit the ring. Becky informs him that I've had to listen to you tell lies about my husband, the greatest man I've ever known, while you are a coward. Everything that Seth has said, or everything that Seth is, you will never be. Hot, jacked, talented, and a champion, and he doesn't interrupt me. And Punk says, well, I wish he would interrupt you so I don't have to listen to you. Becky says that I had to listen to the CM Punk chants during my matches too while you were gone, and it was a signal that the fans didn't care about me or the hard work that I was putting in. So she says that Punk is the poster child for apathy and says, I got myself to the main event of WrestleMania, not with the help of these people. Me and Seth got this business to where it is today. We landed these television deals. And the crowd is chanting, shut the fuck up at Becky. She's getting a lot of heat for this. And Becky screams that they started a revolution. Both her and Seth are champions. Punk is losing his mind listening to all of this. And Becky says to get out of our way. And you are not what the business needs right now. We wish you the best in your future endeavors. As there's more chance for AJ, Punk, you don't fit the vision. So now it's Punk's turn. He's taking this all in, and his retort. He says, all of that sounded really good, Becky, but the vision is a bit blurry. He says, I am the best in the world, and they chant my name whether I work here or I don't, whether I'm in catering or in the middle of this ring, whether I'm champion or not, and lists off all of the towns he worked on this European tour. And notice that Seth and Becky were not on the same shows with their plastic belts. The only thing that Seth runs is from adversity when it stares him in the face. He hides behind the vision, and now he's hiding behind his wife. And Punk, realizing probably how this line would come off, was very quick to qualify that you are so much more than somebody's wife. You're a supremely talented woman. It just turns out you married a bum. Seth is a paper champion, and this war will never be over between them. So from there, Seth finally wanders out from backstage, waving toward Punk, and says that Punk calls him down to the ring to say it to his face, but Becky blocks Punk, and Rollins just waltzes to the back, and Becky starts slapping Punk, just paintbrushing him over and over, and asks if Punk is going to do something. And when Punk doesn't hit a woman, she calls Punk pathetic. Punk simply says, I'm going to make Rollins regret ever cashing in on me, and I'm going to make you regret putting your hands on me. And I mean, if that was not your signal, Becky says afterwards, I'm gonna have to bathe in bleach to get all your gross sweat off of me. I had to throw my hoodie out last night because of your ball sweat. And she's just mocking the crowd, starts to sing the goodbye song, and Becky is just screaming at him, calling him disgusting, gross, you'll never be champion, as Punk has to take all this, walking to the back, and Becky says, good, and never come back. I thought Becky and Punk were fantastic in their roles in this segment. Becky was at an irritating level that I think few are able to get to. And I think it's going to be a tremendous reception for the way they have set this up for AJ Lee. I mean, they could not have set this up any cleaner than they did in this segment.
Becky was awesome here, you know, setting CM Punk's, at this point, like a pretty chilled CM Punk, but setting his anger levels to just a complete boil. And I thought like they had to straddle a pretty fine line here in giving us this interaction. First of all, a dream interaction between two of the like top promos in the company, Becky Lynch and CM Punk. And I think that is more than justification enough for inserting Becky Lynch into the vision, because you now allow Becky to break through the women's division, and you allow her scene partners like a CM Punk, where she can really feel like a top star, and she gets to sort of they both get the you know, these sort of dream pairings on the microphone. And they had to straddle a bit of a fine line here, because the goal here was for Becky to make CM Punk so mad that Punk would have to somehow unleash onto Becky in any way, except obviously put his hands on her, and also to even directly insult her, because that would very much go against, I think, the CM Punk character. And Becky did such a great job. I would even suggest this might be her best heel work to date. Legitimate heel work where you'd actually want to see her get beaten up. And Punk did such a great job of selling everything here, including the slaps, that I mean, they did such a great job of just making everybody want to see AJ more. So if this was the role, they both completely nailed it. Becky Lynch, especially. So absolutely great segment.
So they didn't like put up a graphic or make a big deal out of this. And you might've missed it in the commentary afterward, but Wade notes the fact they promoted John Cena's last appearance in Chicago on Friday and also mentioned CM Punk having an unscheduled appearance in Chicago. And it was
the scene from Pierce set it up.
Where was this?
Oh, this is right afterwards. Yeah.
So, okay, then I missed that.
You missed it, yeah. So Seth Rollins is CM Punk and Seth Rollins. Sorry, Adam Pearce and CM Punk have an interaction backstage where Pearce informs Punk that Rollins isn't here, so Punk shouldn't go looking for him. And Punk then asks where SmackDown is on Friday. Pearce confirms it's Chicago. So there's your answer. Punk is going to be.
I totally missed this scene. Okay, so that makes sense, and that's. I mean, that makes all the sense in the world for Friday to shoot the angle, I would say.
Yeah.
But what about the brand split?
Well, he got a special pass. Yeah,
he got his pass.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This week, it is our open house at postwrestlingcafe.com where you get free access to sample all of our bonus shows for one entire week, including Way and I reviewing the final edition of WWE Unreal, Rewind Away covering Survivor Series 1993, and editions of Post Pro Res Collision Course and the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. Sign up on the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com for open house week. Jey Uso, LA Knight against Braun and Braun. So they went really lengthy on this show. This was like a 2-hour, 45-minute show, roughly. Reed drills Jey from behind, so the heels get the advantage. Knight would come in, uses a neck breaker, and then it's Reed taking over after a splash from behind, lands the senton, and Braun is taunting LA Knight as an old man, builds up to the tag from Jey, and he goes for a spear onto Breaker, and together him and LA Knight join hands for a double clothesline, sending LA Reed to the floor. They're getting along. There's a BFT to Breaker, followed by the Uso splash, but Reed yanks Jey to the floor. Knight leaps through with a drop kick, and then Knight gets posted. Jey lands several super kicks and a spear to Bronson and goes for the Uso splash. It connects, but Braun spears Jey to his injured ribs because Braun is the legal man and pins Jey. The post-match, Braun spears LA Knight, throws him over the desk, and then Braun runs the ropes, spearing Jey a second time. Reed hits the tsunami, and then the hall passes were flying because Jimmy Uso runs out with his patented chair to clear out the ring and check on his brother. And that is how the show ends, with Jimmy and Jey together and maybe something involving the Usos with Braun and Braun.
Yeah, looks like it. They're pairing the Usos back together, maybe just for this week. Maybe could it be an indication that Sammy and Jacob could also be getting hall passes soon? Perhaps, we don't know. But I thought it was fine. You know, I thought the match was okay, but really did feel like the promo segment was tonight's main event.
Agreed.
I thought Knight and Jey did good work together on the show. Both, you know, are still very much a clear, like, I would say B-level main eventer compared to the upper crop. But I thought for a TV show, they did a decent enough job of basically playing the sort of to carry the Roman Reigns storyline without Roman actually being here.
And that was Raw, again, a super crowd that they had. And I would say some good wrestling on this show. I thought that Finn Balor, Dragon Lee, and Dominic and AJ Styles were all, you know, very good TV matches that they had on this show, and the big segment with Punk and Becky, which looks to be setting up our intergender tag match, and probably a really big segment on Friday for SmackDown in Chicago. And you've got Punk and Cena on that show, so we will see how Friday's show performs. And you've got to get this Cena Brock match set up. I would not be surprised if SmackDown we get like the key matches set up for WrestlePalooza.
I think we already can assume, you know, we've already got Vakir versus Io Sky for to crown the champion. We can assume AJ with CM Punk versus Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins. We can assume Brock Lesnar versus John Cena.
And
we can assume the Usos versus Braun and Braun.
And I was going to say Cody and Drew. Like that could be your card right there.
Oh, that's a pretty big card. Yeah.
It's a very, very strong card for Indianapolis. So, yes, it's also worth noting, this had been reported, but you can see on the Netflix schedule, next week it's normal time as usual, but then the following three Mondays, it's a 7 p.m. Eastern start on Netflix for the final three Mondays of September as well. So those are going to be happening as well this coming month as you keep track of all these different start times for the show. But there you go. That is going to wrap up our review of Raw. We are going to be continuing at forum.postwrestling.com. If you are just joining us on YouTube, you want the show to continue, consider joining the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com, where you can have the whole XL edition of the shows for this week only. And then if you are so intrigued, you can jump up. $6 a month gives you access to all of our shows each and every week, including the XL versions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown. And again, this week we will have our final review of WWE Unreal dropping Tuesday, Rewind Away on Thursday, and then Collision Course coming up Saturday, where I will be joining Kate from Montreal for the show once again from Philadelphia with a Jon Moxley Daniel Garcia rematch. And Post Pro Res is up today as well. You can hear WH and Karen. That's available for everyone right now. So time to headway to the forum. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.